Oh, he used to just bait.
Yeah, he used to just bait. And he'd go turtle hunting. And he made me, well, I was about 10 years old, I guess, when he had that, I told you that he had a blacksmith shop. He took a wagon rod out. A wagon rod goes through one side by the tailgate or the front, screws in a place over here to hold that together. Well, that has a ring on this end you could hold it, but on that end he'd heat it and hammer it out and grind it off, and then he'd heat it and twist it around like a hook on the end of it. And I'd go down there where he changed the creek run that one time, cut some trees down and took a scoop, like, you know, you with mules, full of mules, and scooped out some of that over there, and when the creek would get out of banks, it washed straight across that little spot and got there. And I'd go down in there and find where them turtles was in that little creek. They just hold the water here and there, and it's muddy. Find them and get hook them, you know, and I'd get me some turtles, a loggerhead turtle. And one time we was down there at the mill, took some corn down there to grind it, had it ground. Berry Green run that mill. And got down there, and he turned the water on at the water house there, you know, that gate, and it couldn't get no water. Well, what happened? There was a turtle up there. I guess it was 16 inches across the shell, or 18 back then, and it had that block where that wouldn't turn. So my daddy got down in there and he got wet and everything else, but he took my turtle hook and pulled that thing, got it out up there, and they dressed it there in the mill house, cut it up in pieces, and used river water to wash it with.
What did you make out of the turtle?
You fry them. Well, they used to make some turtle soups and things, you know, because it's bony, you know. But I used to get them and fry them sometimes. Used to go possum hunting and catch them possums. And this old woman that we lived on her place, and she had a daughter named Ethel, was an old maid then. She married John D. Sexton later on. But I was catching them turtles, and I'd come up through there, and I had them in a sack and couldn't hardly tote them. But, "You caught some, Charlie?" I said, "Yeah." So she wanted one. So I had to dress her one and give them to them. But when I was possum hunting, they wanted some possum. So I had to kill them and skin them, you know. And they took sweet potatoes and baked them in a big old pan and baked that possum in there and them sweet potatoes in with it. And then they was wanting a possum all the time, you know. And I'd go down and kill squirrels around where the hickory nut trees were. There's hickory nut trees everywhere. And wild grapes, these winter grapes, muscadines and all that, and go pick them, and they'd want some. I was always out doing something. My daddy, too, he showed me how and where to go and how to go to shoot squirrels when squirrel season was over. But he hunted and I'd go rabbit hunting. But we had it's been a most wonderful life to realize what all I have been through and how my dad and mother lived and showed us how to, you know, to stay afloat, so to speak, not be go down under and get drowned.
You mentioned having to fight to stay afloat. How did the depression affect your family?
Well, it affected it quite a bit, but we did as well as anybody, and better than a lot of them, because we already had we'd have to give away or throw away something sometimes. We didn't use it all. And my grandpa, my mother's daddy over there, he was the same way. And okay, like I told you about, they make this soap. They cut their wood and cut them old pine trees down, a lighter, we call that, roots and all. You cut them ladder knots up to start with. Well, you didn't have no newspapers much then. You had Sears and Roebuck catalogs, but you usually took them out to the little outhouse, you know. But I won't tell you good about that. I was at Huntsville the other day. I was around looking, and this girl said, "Yeah, could I help you?" I said, "Yeah, I was looking for one of them big old Sears and Roebuck catalogs." She said, we don't have any anymore. What do you need with that? I said, well, I was raised up with them. That's all we had, to take to the barn and the outhouse, you know, for toilet tissue. She got tickled. There were some people standing around there, and they just kept on laughing about it. Said, y'all better get him some serious robust catalog. But it's funny how you remember little things like taking them old catalogs or newspapers or something, and corn cobs and things like that. Anything that the situation existed, you with trial and error, you came up doing things that today, this day and time, you wouldn't try things like that at all whatsoever. You just wouldn't do it.
I hope the Sears and Roebuck catalog was on different paper then than it is now.
Yeah.
It wasn't slick.
That's right. Now you'd have to crinkle it quite a bit, wouldn't you? But back then, see, they had some of the... Well, they didn't have much of the color sheets back then, you know. That should make them more tough. But you'd get them, then you'd get a sale book, and you'd be surprised. There was 50% of the people, I guess, around everywhere where we lived would order something during the year. And then they'd give them a catalog. If they had a sale thing on, they'd send a little, pretty good sized little old sale catalog out to people who had traded with them. And but now they've gotten rid of that and they've got everything different. But they're sort of like, you know, they've closed a lot of their stores. I thought they were going to go like Walmart and all, but they haven't. But those days, the old days, a lot of people still say they were the best days. In essence, I guess they were. To some people, like myself and a lot of other people, you gain some kinds of knowledge and things from it that you'll never forget. But it's gotten to where now, like I told you about all the equipment and things, how they can just take one big tractor and you've got your planter and your distributors on it and everything. You just go down through there and you put the gunner out with the distributors and you got your planter to put your seeds out, if it's corn or soybeans or wheat or whatever. And back then we had to get out there, and if we had to, we'd plant our seeds by hand, you know, just fix a row and just drop them. And then you had to have all of your things planned and your strategy how you wanted to do it. And like that hoeing, after your cotton comes up and you get in there with that scratcher and scratch it, then it got to where we had fowler, as they called them. That's the thing with it didn't have the teeth on them, had blades, it comes back like so, and you drop it down and it would push that dirt back, and then you could get in there with a scratcher or a fly. But after you went over it to start with, you get in there and chop it. That's thinning it out, you know, because sometimes it would be more than a stand and you'd have to block it out. And then you'd get back and plow it. And then it'd rain and you'd have to be doing this or that. You only had two mules, you know, and two of you to plow or something. And you'd have to wait before we could get back to plow it. And then you had to go hoe it. It'd come up with a lot of grass. Then you had to hoe it. And then you'd get in there and plow it. You'd hoe it. Sometimes you'd cut down a stalk or two, but you'd have to try to rake something up by it.
With all that farm work, how did you children ever manage to go to school?
We went to school, and we didn't... sometimes we'd have to take off a day or something other than pick some cotton. Or if we'd get somebody to help us, he wanted to pick a bale or something where we'd have some money or something. You had to pay your ginning, and way back yonder, it seemed like it was about less than a dollar a bale. Back when it was 5 and 6 cents a pound, because when you sold a bale, a 500-pound bale, at five—that's $30. See, I believe it was a dollar a bale there. That and then went to a dollar and a quarter. But you got to work just picking that in little sacks, like I told you, and all. You've got to just get down on your hands and knees and pick up them taters and do whatever you need to. You've got to plan your strategy, like you're talking about going to school. you need to, when you're needed, then you can take a day off or 2 days off. But we didn't just drop out of school like some of them.
So did you all finish school?
Yeah, we. I reckon Irene finished, didn't she? Lila did.
And these are your sisters?
Yeah, I finished in 1941.
Did you go to school after that? You said you taught.
Yeah, I went to school after that a little. See, I'd had some agricultural training, too. And I was teaching on the farm training, World War II veterans, I think I told you. And that, and I had farmed, you know, been around farming all my life, too. So that's why they hired me, they came after me for this job I'm doing now. I don't know if I told you about that. I work for the National Association of State Department of Agriculture out of Montgomery part-time. I have, I think I told you that before. But
what do you do for them?
I go out and I got maps. You got segments on it, maybe 300 or 400 acres, or 200 or 300, or 1,200 or 2,000 acres. And the computer signs it where they want it. Well, they want one in different localities and different counties where they can get different kinds of crops. Well, like pecans, something, we do that, and peaches and apples, we do that. But basically, we go to the farmer. If it's a new segment, we've never been there before, we'll take that, and then we've got an aerial photo with it drawn off on it. We go to every house in that segment if it looks like it's a farmer. And if it's just housing projects and things, sometimes you get caught like that, and you've got to go and ask ever so many houses, do you farm, or do you know anybody that lives in here that does? And if they don't, you just put out how many people in that area. You call it a tract of land. But if they do farm, you write them down, their name, address, and phone number, and social security number. And the reason for that social security number is, well, when they sell something, they have to put their social security number down. Well, when we go to mail stuff out or call somebody, like out of the office at Montgomery, then there's a lot of Charlies. If you look, our Bobs or Jims or Jimmys, with the same last name. And it'll, if it's a little hard to get up, when the farmer sells something, if it's cattle, hogs or chickens or grain crops or what, when he sells something, they get his name, and if he wants to give his social security number. It's not compulsory, but it's great to have it, because then you won't have to be mailing out. You might mail him one and on that one, one on that one, because it's the same name. And but we take and do them like that, ask them if they farm, and then we got these things we fill out, questionnaires, and it's fixed with how many fields and what's in your first field. If you live inside that segment, say that segment was here, and that's in the inside, but if you live out here, you wouldn't be. But if you live inside, we'd put you down, the first one would be an A, or number one. Say if your letter was an A, your first field is your residential area, and number two is the next one. Three, if you got 10 fields, but then you ride over here, it's got soybeans here, corn over there, and cotton down here, clover over here, and then pastures over here, and chicken houses over here. You draw that all them out as little tracks. And we're trying to, we can get legislation to help the farmer. There's quite a few of them that's a little leery about wanting to tell you anything. But I wouldn't have taken the job if I went down and went through the computers and things before I'd take it. See, they found out that I taught vocational agriculture, some of them did, and they wanted me to take the job because they knew I knew something about it. And I've worked in paperwork all my life before I retired. I worked for the Army a while and retired from Marshall Space Flight Center in 1974. And we just do trying to help the farmer. If they had to give me $20 an hour to go out there and I didn't think it would help the farmer, I wouldn't go. Because the farmer feeds the world. He don't just feed this county or state. And then I get to go out and see what and how, and it makes me appreciate living through this era, because I can see all, as like I told you before, all the kind of things that they've got, equipment, things. It's great to see that when I wasn't raised up with it, you know.
Mm-hmm.